talk, everyone. Welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley. I am joined tonight on St. Patrick's Day for a discussion of what else? Run, Lola, Run by Doug.
Hey, this is everyone's favorite Irish movie. I was actually confused because at first I thought we were going to do a show on Waking Ned Devine being St. Patrick's Day and all.
I don't want to watch Waking Ned Devine again.
Have you ever watched Waking Ned Devine?
I actually have. Once was enough.
And it's funny because I was thinking, I thought to myself, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day weekend. And I honestly, this is probably my least favorite holiday. I don't like people, and I don't like crowds, and I don't like green stuff. And I don't like drinking to excess with Irish people who are already so – I'm sorry. Patrick is Irish, but I'm going to say this anyway.
It's okay.
Who are so proud of their Irish heritage already 364 days a year that this is the one day they can really be extra super proud of being huge Boondock Saints fans and huge fans of what other – so anyway, I did some research of like, okay, maybe I'll watch a St. Patrick's Day themed movie this weekend. And there's really not – aside from the Leprechaun series.
Yeah. Which I think sci-fi was like running a marathon, right?
I don't even know. But I know – and I'm going to totally pat you on the back and pat our site on the back. I want to say in 2010, you ranked the best St. Patrick's Day movies, and it was just a list of all the Leprechauns. So I thought that was brilliant. But I found it like a website, and it's like literally Waking Ned Devine, The Brothers McMullen, Far and Away, Gangs of New York. And I'm thinking like, these aren't St. Patrick's Day movies. These are just movies starring Irish Americans.
Right, or Americans trying to pretend to be Irish.
Yeah, it's a better description. Here's some other ones. The Devil's Own, The Departed.
The Devil's Own has my favorite Irish accent ever, courtesy of Brad Pitt. I need that money, Tom.
So it really gets to The Departed, and I'm like, really, that's The Departed because it takes place in Boston? Like,
Irish mob? I don't remember.
I don't even – I don't even know
if they were Irish, right? Wasn't Nicholson's name like Costello?
So it's Italian.
I'm confused.
By the way, I take it back. I think Italians might be the people that are most proud of being Italian, and they don't. Thank God they don't have their own Italian day.
Irish people are definitely not the most proud of being Italian. I'm positive you're right about that.
But I say this as a proud German person, so right. We're talking about.
Hey, Lola. Speaking of things that are German,
oh,
we're going to talk about Run Lola Run.
That's right. I call it, please. I'm so proud of being German. I only call it Lola Rent.
Oh, wow. You're that guy. Don't you call Hard Eight Sydney also?
That's right. You've met me before. I say.
Remember, everybody, if you want to find all of our past episodes, go to fthismovie.net. You can search for us in the iTunes store. And while you're there, if you like us, go ahead and leave a nice star rating or a nice review if you can. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie, and email us show suggestions, feedback, questions, whatevs, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
That's impressive. You got through that so quickly. I listen to some other podcasts sometimes. I'm pretty spotty with my listening to podcasts, and their rap about the things you've heard before last 15, 20 minutes. And I'm like, oh my God, just like spit it out quickly because people that are fans know, and people that don't know will pay attention enough that you talk quickly, they'll pick it up.
I've been back and forth on if I should move all that stuff to the end because I feel bad. But really, it's about 16 seconds. So
yeah, hopefully. It's impressive. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Well, that makes up for me having to start the show three times because I couldn't.
Peeling the curtain back on the production quality of F This Movie.
Hey, Douglas, have you seen anything Guten lately? Guten is not German for good. It is not.
Actually, Guts, right? Oh. That's just German for good. Guts.
How do I know? I'm not a proud German.
Spelled G-U-T. Gut,
oh,
you know, gut.
Gut. Have you seen anything
I've seen lots of
Guts lately?
A tiny little too. It's been a while since I've been on the show, so I've seen a bunch of stuff. A lot of it good, and a lot of it actually based on suggestions from F This Movie.
Nice.
And I wrote in my dinky little column last week about how I was really, and it wasn't lip service. I'm really kind of pleased, and I know this sounds like again just patting ourselves on the back, and I'm really trying not to, but I'm pleased with everyone else's contributions. I'm happy with everyone's comments below the articles and columns. And I'm happy to read Heath and Adam's takes on things. It's just a breath of fresh air, so it's really cool. And Adam recently had talked about Jurassic Park. And I that night, I'm like, I haven't seen that movie in probably 10 years. And I just put it on. And it's a great movie. And everything he said is true. Because one thing specifically, it really does hold up. And I think that the effects, the mix of CGI and practical are really great. Some of the CG stuff is not the best, but you're willing to accept it, whatever. Yeah. But it's one of those movies where, and I think he mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing greatly, so correct me if I'm wrong, but he said something like how he can't, there's not much else he can take from it. Like, he's gotten everything he right. can get from the movie. And I don't know if I'm there at that point or whatever, but it's definitely a movie where you can watch and zone out for 20 minutes and or just have on in the background as you're making dinner and just still be entertained by it and still catch all the beats and catch all the funny parts and that great Jeff Goldblum moment or when Ben Chiang or what's his name lifts his pencil off the paper, like all that stuff you kind of are trained to remember. So it was just fun to watch that. So I saw that. I caught like 99% of The Matrix on HBO randomly the other night, which was great. Like, I hadn't seen The Matrix in probably 5 years, and I'm like, this movie's great. Why don't I watch this every year? Good gravy. I caught The Dictator for the first time.
Oh, okay.
And this, I don't know if you've talked about this on a past podcast, just in briefly, like, what have you seen lately?
Probably not.
It's garbage, you know, to be sure. It's, you know, and it's funny because I really do think Sacha Baron Cohen is one of those certifiable, like, brilliant, and I say that word not lightly. I think he's super funny and clever and creative, and the characters he makes are awesome. Like, I mean, the Ali G show is probably one of the funniest things. I remember watching it for the first, like, blown away. I know he's been compared to Andy Kaufman and whatever else, but I really do think he's really, really funny. And I'm not even the biggest fan of, I think Borat's pretty funny. I think Bruno's kind of very hit and miss. And this movie is just like, well, okay, I guess we're done with you. I don't know. It's such a weird kind of movie. But I will say this also, that I obviously came to the party kind of late in as much as the movie came out last year and I'm watching it in March of 2013. So obviously, like, no one's talking about it.
Nobody was talking about it when it came out, though. It's not like it caught fire and you just missed that cultural tidal wave. Like,
I guess what I mean is that people, like, said it was horrible. Like, that's what I remember about, like, the movie, that it was like, oh, this is just such a piece of crap. And I watched it, and it is not good. And I will say that. It's definitely very cheap and easy. But I will say also that I laughed a few times, you know, and I think that like, I wish I could say as much about some very popular comedies, you know, and not to say that The Dictator is better than those comedies or is even a good movie. I'm not recommending it, but there's definitely moments where I was reminded of the inspired Sacha Baron Cohen from Ali G or from Borat or the characters he made. And I wish it just had more of that instead of just like the very easy jokes of like dick and balls and like rape and whatever else, you know, just it's so easy to go down that route. And I wish it just had a little more of the funny stuff. And I think I could say that about any comedy. I wish it had more.
Well, I definitely think like we're probably holding him and the movie to a higher standard, because if I laugh as many times in The Dictator as I do in like Horrible Bosses, I come away saying The Dictator was terrible, but the Horrible Bosses was better than I expected, because it's all just about what I was anticipating going in. So I come out of Horrible Bosses like, that wasn't bad. And The Dictator, I'm like, oh, that is such a disappointment. Even though I may have laughed as many times in both, you know?
It's such, you're completely right. Such a matter of expectations. And I think even the moments that I laughed really hard at in The Dictator, and honestly, I can think of a few examples, but they're so bad, I won't even say them now because they're not even that funny. Mm-hmm. But I got to think that the few moments I laughed were like, the parts that weren't the script and the parts that they're just like riffing and or like he kind of goes down a path that's a little like weird and just and not dirty and not gross or not whatever, but just like a little, just an odd kind of comment on stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the stuff I'm like, wow, that's just so funny. And I wish, and it's, I guess it's really hard to bottle that though, if you know, to make that a 90-minute movie, because even the Ali G movie, Ali G in the House, is garbage.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
It's well, and I think maybe he suffers a little bit from like his style of comedy is he obviously is best when he's in the real world dealing with real people. And I know, yes, Borat and Bruno have a lot of plants and a lot of like most people in the movie are in on the joke, mm-hmm. but there's still enough of outside people. And that's what, of course, the Ali G show is so funny because he's really talking to, Kofi Annan or Newt Gingrich or whomever. And he's really getting genuine, you know, response.
Right,
and he's,
right.
It's, and he's able to play it and never breaks character, and it's just so funny. Whereas then he starts to put that, you know, pen to paper and starts to write a narrative about that. And it's like, oh, this is – it doesn't quite work as well when it's that.
And it's such a problem because I agree that, like, that style that he did on the Ali G show or in Borat is obviously what he's best at and what's funniest. But even by the time Bruno came out – it was like, oh, this again? Like, it's so kind of limiting because Bruno comes out and it's like, well, this is just Borat with a different character. So he can't really keep doing that. But I also agree that then when he sort of tries to write something scripted like The Dictator, it was disappointing.
And he's such an interesting person, I think, too, because he is kind of – I almost consider him outside Hollywood, but he is definitely – like, he's in Hugo, he's in Les Mis. Yeah. I mean, he's taken these parts, these kind of straight parts also.
He was on stage singing at the Oscars.
Right, and it was such a weird moment where I'm like, no, you're the guy that, like, I mean, in a very bad, not bad because it was naughty, but just, like, lame, where he, like, spilled flour on Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, right.
Oscars, and it's like, no, you're that guy who's, like, the dick, you know, like the, I don't know, just the outside, and now you're just, like, on stage. And, you know, I guess he didn't look thrilled to be there, but still, it's like, I guess... I don't know. I can't put myself in his shoes, but if you want to play with in that crowd, you got to, you know,
right.
Whatever.
I don't really look forward to like his next movie though, only because I don't want to see him out promoting it in character.
Right. And didn't he come on, even Stern, he came on. No, he was the one, that was the one show he actually came on as Sacha Baron Cohen, right?
Yeah. He has come on as Borat. I don't think he ever went on as Bruno, but yeah, I like when he comes on as himself. I have no interest in hearing Borat interviewed.
He's an interesting guy. I actually want to know, like, I'm interested in, as far as lame and as this sounds, like, I'm interested in his, because if anything, like, it's Daniel Day-Lewis who's a method actor, and like him, I don't know whether I don't care about Gerard Butler's methods, you know. I don't care about, I don't know, Katherine Heigl, like, how she's motivated, like, what's her inspiration. I don't care. But like Sacha Baron Cohen, who is creating something from scratch for the most part, I am kind of curious about that. And it's a shame that now we're gonna, it's gonna be you know, the guy from The Dictator. It's, whatever.
anything else that you've seen lately?
The last thing I'll mention, I saw for the first time, I know I'm super late to the party, is I'll preface it by saying my wife is due with our first child in about a week.
Any minute, really.
Yeah, she's actually in labor in the other room on a labor ball doing her breathing. She's hypnobirthing in the background. God, is that – oh, that was you.
I'm doing her Lamaze coaching via podcast.
Well, if I ever have to take a break, though, it's only because I'm getting her ice chips. No reason.
And wiping her brow.
That's right, yes. So last night was our excuse to go out and have like a date night. Kind of not a last date night. That sounds so stupid. And
no, that was it. It's over.
Right, exactly. And that's everyone. It's like, oh, and did you prepare to have your life changed? And I get it. But we just wanted to have like a nice night where we went to our favorite restaurant in our neighborhood, and we went to see Silver Linings Playbook at the Patio, a great theater in Chicago, which we've talked about a lot before. Yeah, it's been months since it came out, obviously, and last month was the Oscars, and it has came and went for all intents and purposes. But I still hadn't seen it, so I wanted to see it. I know F This Movie's own Adam Risky, I think it's correct me if I'm wrong, it's his favorite movie of 2012, right?
Correct.
So yeah, it was... it was good. It's great. I don't know if it would have made my top 10 list, which I know is such a stupid, arbitrary, like, who cares? We shouldn't have to box in movies. I liked it. I thought Jennifer Lawrence was fine, but I actually was more impressed by Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro. I thought they were really, really good. And Bradley Cooper, the best thing I've seen him in, I think. And it just gives me pause and makes me wonder why he wants to do – well, I get why he does The Hangover. I get it. It's money. And he produced Silver Linings Playbook, obviously, so this is maybe where his passion lies. But, man, I wish he did more stuff like this because it's so much more interesting, this character, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's got a movie coming out with Ryan Gosling called The Place Beyond the Pines that looks much more like Silver Linings Playbook than it does The Hangover. It looks like he's – trying to act again.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, I've seen the trailer. I featured it probably 2 months ago, and it's,
yeah.
I'm really, yeah, it looks really good. I didn't know he was in that, so that's good. So yeah, I saw it. I liked it. Jennifer Lawrence is a very attractive 22-year-old girl, and with a nice little body. What am I talking about? it does kind of go for me a little bit. It goes a little off the rails when it becomes like a Meet the Parents type movie where, you know, and not at all like Meet the Parents, but I think you know what I mean in terms of like where they have to make a big bet. And it's, you know, all right. the doctors there and the cops there, and like they have to explain how this works, and they have to perform this big thing at the end. It's like, you know, in like Love Actually, there's that big perform, or even better, what's that movie? It's another British movie with the kid. Is it About a Boy?
Yes.
Where isn't it the end of the movie is like a performance?
Yeah, he's singing Roberta Flack.
Right, and it's just like it seems kind of like screenwriting. I know David O. Russell's great. I'm not going to knock the script or anything like that, but it does seem a little like, well, we've got to have a big finale and have this big confrontation and things like that. And and I'm not even against it. I think my point I'm trying to make is that it just feels kind of like two different types of things of narrative.
Right.
Is where you've got the first thing, which is just a character study and kind of like him going through things, and he's kind of messed up and he's bipolar and he's with this girl who's also bipolar. And at the end, they've got to perform. They've got to get a 5 on the dance competition. Otherwise, the dad loses money. Like, what? It is about the dad's gambling, you know?
It becomes a very weird, conventional Hollywood movie. It was so fascinating to me. And again, my opinions about the Oscars and everything are pretty well documented. So it's not like I put a lot of stock in them, but there's all this talk about the movie being nominated for all these Oscars. It got nominated for a bunch, and Jennifer Lawrence was sort of a lock to win, and she eventually did. And it was very strange to me because Bradley Cooper, unfortunately, you know, had a good performance in a year where a lot of other actors did too, and especially, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln was always sort of the sure thing. And so Bradley Cooper had to watch his movie get all this Oscar talk and pick up all these awards, but like he was never really part of the conversation. And it's crazy to me because Jennifer Lawrence is good in the movie and she's talented and so whatever, but like she is not in any scenes that he is not in. Her character exists only in relation to him. Without Bradley Cooper, there is no Jennifer Lawrence in that movie. And really, he kind of carries it. And so it was strange to me to see everyone come out of it saying, hey, that Jennifer Lawrence, she's something. I would have thought that he would have gotten a little more. And obviously, he got recognition. He was nominated for Best Actor. But most of the recognition seemed to be like, hey, I didn't know that guy could act.
Right. So and maybe that's even what I'm like kind of throwing my head into that ring too, because it's like, right. I wish you did stuff like this more, which is
okay, but you saw Limitless. I mean, you know what the guy is capable of.
He definitely got on that drug. What's that? I used to use that stupid drug as an example of like, oh shit, it's going to bug me. I'll think of it like halfway through and just shout out a word. So disregard that.
Okay.
But it's, it's good. And, you know, I want to say a little bit about, but I don't want to spoil it, but I will say that like, in another kind of movie, the ending that it has – okay, I think I could spoil it. I think I don't have to spoil it, right? I won't spoil it by saying this. Like he's mentally disturbed and it's kind of hinted at that she might be too, mm-hmm. but it's never really like – I mean they explore it a little bit. And I'm just going to take a step back and I'm not talking about the end of the movie, but it's like halfway through I'm like, should these people even be flirting? Because they're both, like they both need like serious – doctor help. They both need to, and I don't think even if they do end up together, which we hope they do, and let's cross our fingers, that it's the best thing for them.
Right.
You know, but who am I? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a screenwriter.
Do you think the movie should have been called
Doctor Screenwriter?
Do you think the movie should have been called Doctor Help?
Doctor Help, yes. Script doctor. Sorry. So I did like it. I am sounding kind of negative right now because I did really enjoy it, but I just have some issues where I'm like, oh, it kind of shifts to this kind of movie at the end and some other things that are treated kind of lightly. And where the first half, they're treated pretty seriously. And then it's just kind of like, oh, isn't it funny when Bradley Cooper is kind of crazy, you know?
Right.
This is kind of an off-topic question. Is there a performance, and I know you don't subscribe to the Oscar bullshit.
Yeah.
Is there a performance this year by a leading male, not Daniel Day-Lewis, because that's like, I mean, yeah, it was excellent and great, that you were blown away by?
Joaquin Phoenix in The Master.
And that's what I've heard a lot. I was hoping actually you'd said that. And honestly, we hadn't talked about this before, audience. But I still haven't seen The Master. It's on like pay-per-view now, and I definitely want to see it. But I'm so intrigued by his performance because if anything, what we're told about like what the bill of goods we're sold by Hollywood and by the award season is like, oh, he just transformed and blah, blah, blah. It actually sounds like this guy really did do all those things.
I'm still trying to work out my feelings about the movie. And I mean, but the performance is just so odd. and so, like, lived in – he's on another planet I've never seen. And I'm not even saying, like, I loved it so much because it's not that kind of performance. But, like, I've never seen somebody give that kind of performance. It's crazy.
Wow. No, okay. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Yeah, it's worth it's worth checking out, obviously. Not that you weren't going to already. I saw Celeste and Jesse Forever.
How is that? I remember seeing the trailer for that and being and wanting to see it really badly. Then it kind of disappeared.
Yeah, it didn't really ever get a wide release. I liked it. I mean, it's slight and kind of formulaic in a way that you wish it wasn't. But it has sort of that pseudo-indie, pseudo-studio movie polish that I think you kind of like. I mean, I kind of like it too. I think you would like it. What's her name is really good. I'm not coming out with it. Rashida Jones. I kept wanting to say Radha Mitchell, but that's not right. Rashida Jones.
Just say what's her name and then just move on.
Rashida Jones is really good. She's kind of the whole movie. And I mean, I've always liked her enough, but I've never really seen her give like a real performance before. And she does in the movie and she's really, really good.
You obviously haven't seen Our Idiot Brother.
I have not. Andy Samberg is fine also and is what the movie sort of calls for, but every once in a while there's a more dramatic scene and you're kind of like, I'm not positive I'm buying this, but he's fine. I mean, it's not like a distraction. I liked the movie. It's not a
high boy.
it's not a great movie, but it was actually probably a little bit better than I expected. I saw a movie called The Baytown Outlaws.
Okay.
And I only saw...
Wait, I do know what that is. That's Zoe Bell.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I only saw it because Zoe Bell is in it, and she's not in very much of the movie.
Oh.
And the movie is really not good. I wish a movie would know what... Every movie does basically the exact same thing with Zoe Bell, which, not to spoil it, is introduce her, maybe let her say a couple of lines, and then kill her off. Spoilers for the Baytown Outlaws. It's just, it's like, I don't understand how they're still making this movie in, you know, I think it was made in 2012, but like, it would have felt dated in 1999. It's just, it's all sort of post-Tarantino. It's like if those three crazy kind of redneck guys from Smokin' Aces, like if a movie followed them the whole time. It's just, it's not good. And I really just watched it for Zoe Bell. And so when she checked out fairly early on, I was like, I could probably turn this off, but you know, I feel compelled to finish it.
Now, true or false, do you see some Zoe Bell booty? The trailer implied as much, but it might have been a body double.
It's difficult to tell. Yeah. It's difficult to tell.
Why is it? And again, not to say like we're so prescient or like forward thinking, but like for real, I do think that she's going to blow up in a way, like they're going to figure out how to use her and there's a lot of other examples, obviously, of actors or things that should be used to better effect. But like, why is it that like she's not catching on yet? And I don't get it. She's great.
I agree. I think she should be in everything. I think she should have been the Jennifer Lawrence role in Silver Linings Playbook.
She should win all the Oscars.
The last thing I saw that I'll talk about is The Incredible Burt Wonderstone.
Oh, good gravy.
Which I saw to review for another job. So if you go to our Facebook page, there will probably be a link to my review of the movie. It's not good. It's not the worst. Like, I really thought it was going to be horrible. And it's not. It's just really generic. Steve Carell is completely miscast. Like, this really seems to be a script that was written for Will Ferrell.
Okay.
And I'm as sick of Will Ferrell doing the same Ron Burgundy shtick as everyone, because he plays that part in every movie. But that's who Burt Wonderstone is, so it really seems like that's who they wrote it for.
Okay.
And Will Ferrell is capable, even in a lazy comedy where he's playing the same part, he's capable of just getting some incidental laughs just with weird line deliveries or something. And Steve Carell did not. There's a few things in it that make it worth watching, I guess, on cable. Like, Jim Carrey's actually really funny in it. Julian Jacobs shows up for a cameo, and so, of course, that's worth watching.
Isn't she Gillian, by the way?
I mean, Gillian Jacobs. makes for a couple minutes that are worth your time. It's just, it's so it's so formulaic. It's everything that they set up in the first 10 minutes. You're like, oh, I wonder if that'll come back. I wonder if they'll do this again. Oh, I wonder if that. And even some of the ideas that it tries to present about sort of old magic versus new magic, which is a funny idea, I think, sort of David Copperfield versus Chris Angel is sort of what it sets up.
Sure. Or even Siegfried and Roy, right? Because they're kind of a part, a duo, right?
Yeah. And they're more obviously kind of flamboyant than David Copperfield. Yeah. But it's just lazy. And I was glad that it didn't just spend the whole movie kind of goofing on magic. Like, it tries to say, like, no, magic can be really cool. And I don't even necessarily have strong feelings one way or the other about magic, but I just felt like if you're going to devote your whole movie to this, it doesn't make sense to just mock it the whole time.
Sure. Actually, I like magic a lot. I can't think of, aside from, like,
you should see Burt Wonderstone.
Aside from The Prestige, which you could even make an argument is not even necessarily about magic. I don't know, like, it's the great magic. What are the great magic movies? Because I don't think they've done it to great effect. I don't know.
The Illusionist, which came out the same year as right. The Prestige, but I like The Prestige way better. There's a movie with Anthony Hopkins called Magic, but that's like a horror movie about like a living ventriloquist doll, so I don't think that counts.
Well, there's the Penn & Teller movie, Penn & Teller Get Killed, right. Which is also kind of about magic, but also not. And not to say like a movie needs to be about magic, because I don't know what kind of movie that would be, but yeah. Like they really... You know, honestly, there's a new movie coming out with what's his name from Social Network.
Now You See Me, I think it's
right,
called.
Which is a garbage title. And the movie also seems to be more about bank heists than magic, yeah. But they use magic to rob banks, apparently. I don't know.
I'm in, though. I saw the trailer, and I'll totally see that movie.
I'm very conflicted about that because I want to make fun of it so hard. Like, so
I want to make
hard.
Fun of it because Jesse Eisenberg has straight hair in it.
Does he really?
And oh, I can't so handle hard. Straight hair Jesse Eisenberg.
No, I can't handle Jesse Eisenberg in hardly anything. And he's great in Social Network, but I think yeah. that – I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I heard some bad things about Burt Wonderstone. I don't really have a desire to see it. It almost seems like a mid-90s that, like you said, Will Ferrell, like the bigger idea of like, oh, let's yeah. riff on NASCAR. Let's riff on 70s news
it,
anchor.
It,
you know?
It reminded me of a way less funny Blades of Glory. So put that on the poster.
A movie I forgot about.
Exactly. But like right Blades of Glory to me was a funnier than I expected it to be, and this was not. So when it shows up on HBO one time, you can watch it.
Has John Heder, Napoleon, that's his name, right? Napoleon Dynamite. Has he done anything recently?
I haven't seen him anything recently. He had this bad like web series where he played a zombie that was garbage, but no, I don't think so. Wow. I think everybody figured out that he had nothing else to offer. All right, so let's talk about Run Lola Run.
Yeah, please, Lola Rent. I'm Lola kidding. Rent. I will not do that joke
from
again.
1999. This was the first time I saw the movie, possibly since 99, although I think I've seen it one time in between. So you're talking, you know, at least 13 years. This was my second viewing, maybe.
Okay.
Gosh, I don't even know where to start. Do you want to start off?
Sure, I'll just talk. I saw this movie in college, and at the time, I was at DePaul. I wasn't pursuing, like, I wasn't a film major by any means, but I was definitely taking film classes and way into movies. And it was the time when I, like, bought my DVD player and bought everything, like, everything that came out on DVD.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
That's right. A movie that I'm like, I need to own this Ang Lee masterpiece. And it has sat on multiple shelves. Like, it's made many moves from, like, you know, from my college place to, like, my parents' house to two places as an adult. And I don't think I've even cracked it open to look at this, what the DVD looks like, or if it's even in there, you know. But at the time, it's like you have to own everything. So this was a time when I was way into movies, and not to say I'm not now, but it was like I ate everything up. And it was probably my first – I think I could say this with authority. It was probably the first foreign film that I had really seen and loved.
Sure.
And it was definitely like that. And I think everyone who loves, and I'm sure people out there can comment, like, the first foreign film you saw and, like, what really kind of got you into it. I'm sure I've seen foreign films in class and stuff before this, but this was the one it's like, wow, this is for me and my generation, you know, generation And I was so into it. And part of it, too, is I took a trip in December of 99 to Berlin So this came like right before that, and I'm like, holy shit, this is kismet, how this is supposed to happen. I'm supposed to see this, and I'm going to go to Berlin and just live this life and become a famous movie star and filmmaker and rock star and astronaut.
It's a weird thing, because this is one of sort of the few foreign movies to kind of break through, which isn't to say that the movie was like a huge success in America, but amongst a generation of movie people who have, you know, the list of movies like Clockwork Orange and Reservoir Dogs and Donnie Darko or whatever, like Run Lola Run shows up on that list. So it's one of the foreign movies to kind of break through to the cool kids.
Yeah.
And it's a weird movie. It's very short. It's only like 80 minutes. And I feel like the whole thing is this exercise. Like, is style enough? Like, can style carry an entire movie? Which isn't totally fair, because I do think that the movie tries to be about a little bit more than just its gimmick. But I think mostly the movie is a gimmick, and it's one of those movies where you watch it and you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe no one has thought of that. And I don't necessarily mean the plot, because the plot is actually, you know, like Groundhog Day, you know? I mean, it's not like she keeps redoing the same thing until she gets it right, but the way that it approaches that material, it's sort of a very sort of thin plot thread, and the way that Tom Tykwer approaches making the movie, it's sort of this weird one-of-a-kind thing where you're like, wow, I can't believe no one has done that before.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to separate myself from Doug of 1999. Mm-hmm. From Doug of 2013.
The Doug who's constantly seeing Deep Blue Sea and
Ghost Dog.
And The Wood? No. Did you see The Wood?
No, I think I bought a ticket for The Wood and then
you saw Lake Placid. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
No, The Doug of 1999 was seeing stuff in like all the Chicago theaters, and I saw like this is when I bought like Stranger Than Paradise, and I'm like, I'm definitely going to watch this again. And like, I'm like, Buffalo 66 is so great, and I love anything Vincent Gallo does, except Brown Bunny, except for that one scene.
Where he's driving around the racetrack, right?
Absolutely. I love how it just goes on and on. It's kind of symbolizes so much. I completely agree.
It symbolizes a blowjob, right?
Going around and around in a girl's mouth. I completely agree that this movie is, if nothing else, and not like I'm super wizened by any means whatsoever right now, but it's definitely like I'm able to step back and be like, wow, I can see it more for what it is, or not so much what it is, but like I think I was definitely just swept up in the kinetic pace of it and the music. It's a thumping, I'm talking about Run Lola Run, not Run Bunny. It's kinetic. It's this moving. It's propelling forward, and it is by virtue of being 80 minutes long, and not having a ton of dialogue. I mean, it's in German. There are some key scenes where they like. I mean, the exposition's laid out in the first 5 minutes, and that's all you pretty much need to know. And there's other stuff that happens that's not as important. And if you kind of gloss over it, it's okay. You still understand the movie. It does feel to me like a gimmick in a lot of ways, and I want to preface it just by saying this. I love this movie. I still do. But I want to – now I'm going to break it down just because – and I – you know, but I want to – I'm very clear that I'm pro Run Lola Run. It is definitely a style exercise in style. Mm-hmm. It feels very much – and I don't think it's Tom Tykwer's first film. I think he made a few others that you've never heard of before just in Germany. He's, I think, born in 65. So he's probably in his early 30s when he made this. This is his first breakthrough film. And it's definitely like – I'm going to do like, and I could imagine if I had my one chance to make a movie, someone gave me $1.75 million and said, make this passion project that you've been thinking about, that's been sitting in your brain, just stewing, and you've got it all figured out. I'm going to pull out all the fucking stops. And that's what he does. I mean, every media is used in this. Every medium, sorry. Media is plural for medium, right? You've got film, 35 millimeter video, still photos, cartoons, black and white, color. I mean, just everything is thrown at the screen.
It's like Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, that is avant-garde with its guard down. By the way, that's Patrick and I saw Natural Born Killers opening morning.
Yeah, right? 94.
It's a Friday. We're like, we got to see this movie. This is written by Quentin Tarantino. Oliver Stone directed it.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to be the best thing ever. And it's not by any means. I'm still, you know, I probably haven't seen it since the 90s, but I remember not hating it.
Yeah, sure. I felt the same way, but it's been a long time.
But the funny thing is we saw this critic who's a local critic. I'll leave him nameless because I think he follows us on Twitter.
Hey, good for
him. He wrote, it's avant-garde with its guard down, and I hated him more than the movie ever because
20
it's like,
years later, we're still making fun of that critique.
That's such a fucking dumb, stupid, you're like, how hard did you work on avant-garde with its guard down? It's like, Natural Born Killers, you could definitely critique it, but like, to critique it that way, you lose your argument, you know? Whatever. Anyway, so Run Lola Run's great. I love it. But it's also gimmicky in that, like, the thoughts it puts out. And it definitely has, like, it tries to say a few things mm-hmm. about free will versus destiny. Or
free will, about, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's still very much – and this is why it worked for me in 99. In college, it's like, this is foreign film 101. And, like, everything thrown at it is, like, philosophy 101 meets style 101.
Right.
Meets film, you know, like
– yeah.
You know, screenwriting 101 meets happy ending 101.
Yeah. for like a 22-year-old, you know, burgeoning film student in college, I can imagine this movie just being like a needle in your chest. Like everything about it sort of grabs you. Not just the fact that you're seeing a foreign film, but how sort of striking Franca Potente is with her red hair, and you know, you instantly sort of develop a crush on her. And then, like you said, it presents these ideas that are sort of rudimentary philosophy or whatever, but you can kind of grab onto that. And then the filmmaking is so aggressive and so it grabs you in such a way that, yeah, I can really see it's the kind of movie that's made to like be responded to on like this gut level.
Right.
And I do think on that level it works. I still like the movie too. I just, watching it this time, I won't say it went down in my estimation, but I just was looking at it as an older person who was seeing past the gimmick a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is a gimmick for
yeah.
sure.
It was interesting though, because I haven't seen a lot of, or possibly any of Tom Tykwer's post Run Lola Run movies. I never saw Heaven. I never saw Perfume. And I think
you can borrow my copy of Princess and the Warrior if you want.
I might even own it and have never watched it.
It's fine. It's not great.
Right. I think he directed The International, that Clive Owen evil bank movie a couple years ago. Like that was his big American debut. I don't think I saw that. I know I didn't see that, but he did co-direct with the Wachowskis, Cloud Atlas, which is a movie that I really loved, and that was my favorite movie last year, and I've gone on and on about Cloud Atlas. Watching Run Lola Run, a lot of the themes in the movie are the same kinds of themes in Cloud Atlas, that really? Our actions impact everyone around us, that everything we do has this ripple effect, you know, and that the way that it's explored in the movie in those quick still frames, which when I saw the movie in 99, like I thought that was super cool, the way that they told right. each person's story a different way each time based on this one little interaction. The interactions this time don't really seem to be, or the fates of those tertiary characters don't really seem to be guided by the interactions, though. You know what I mean? It's almost sort of a random, like,
it absolutely, and this is random, time, right?
Whereas Cloud Atlas, I think, has more to say about the choices that we make then guide the fates of the people around us, you know? And this movie isn't that way as much.
It's interesting you say that. And I thought about too, in terms of like, yeah, it's the whole chaos theory, butterfly effect, kind of like our actions affect other people. And you're completely right.
It reminded me of that movie with Ashton Kutcher, What Happens in Vegas?
Amy Smart was in it. So I want to say it was Road Trip. That's the one we're thinking of, right? Amy Smart and Ashton Kutcher in Road Trip. What's the one movie with Ashton Kutcher where he meets it's like the remake where he meets the parents. He's like dating the black girl.
Guess Who?
Oh my God. Was it good? I haven't seen it.
It was not. It killed Bernie Mac.
Oh dear. He moisturizes though. Aloe vera. Anyway, so you know, it's one thing in 2013 to watch this movie now, and you're completely right in terms of like the butterfly effect affecting the people. And it's random. And I think that's obviously his argument towards free will or not. There's no predestiny that things are just going to happen the way they happen. But again, keep in mind, I'm trying to like go back to 99 when I saw it, and just like how you had never seen something like that before. You had never seen it. And now it's comical when like this isn't a spoiler. What are the tertiary characters? Like, she has an interaction with this girl in a hallway. She like nudges her, and the girl, it's like the flash frames of like the still images of this girl getting into a car accident and then killing herself.
Right.
And it's so like over the top dramatic that it's like, this is uncomfortable to watch. But at the time,
it all
like,
happens in the span of 15 seconds. Too.
Yeah, it's part of it too. But at the time it's like, wow, I think we have to give some due credit to like, I really haven't seen that before. And I'm sure there's people out there that said, no, you have seen that before. There have been movies. I know he was, a big fan of a Polish director. I can't even say the name.
Krzysztof Kozlowski.
Yeah. And I'm sure that he's obviously borrowing, and in this day and age, you really can't make something brand new with these ideas and not borrow from at least a little bit from some other sources. But I do think he puts it in such a way. And again, speaking as a 20-year-old in 99, like this was the movie that was like, first of all, it's German, it's foreign. I'm into movies. It does things I've never seen before. And this is a couple years after the Tarantino wave, but this is done in a different way. It's not cribbing from Tarantino in any way I can see, but it's still like of that same energy and same newness. And I still think it's just like, I'm still reminded like how I'm blown away by like this, just this neat little package. And yeah, you're not going to take anything away from it. I took away from it. Like I like the movie, but you're not thinking about the movie after it's over, because it is tied in a neat little package once it's all said and done. You know?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think about any of like the questions it raises. If I think about it, it's only in terms of its technique. Like, wow, that's cool that he did this. Or I've never seen a movie sustain that energy for 80 minutes. You know, and since then, obviously, I think we have, because we've all seen The Raid Redemption. But
it's funny though, you said before about the list it's on. I think that when you have such like, I mean, he definitely made a conscious choice to have like iconic everything. Like it's an image. It's a still image in his head that we take away with us. It's the poster. It's her with this flaming red hair running in a blur. And that's what the movie is. And it's like, he built the movie around that. This iconic character obviously makes people's lists, and the list is a douche list, but it's, you know, let's not take away from the fact that there are some, you know, Fight Club is on this list.
Well, most of the movies, except for like Boondock Saints on the list, are good.
Right. So, but how can you not be on this list in the late 90s when you make a movie with such an iconic character like Franca Potente, who I had never seen before? And she's kind of after the movie, you know, this movie also was kind of an introduction of, well, basically him, the director, Tom Tykwer, and her to America. And she's gone on to make a couple big movies. She was in Blow. I think that was the first thing I saw her in. Post Run Lola Run.
Yeah, maybe.
And she had a small part in that. And then she was obviously the female lead, for lack of a better word, in The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
I don't know what she's made recently, though. She hasn't really been around too much, I don't think. And I kind of wish we did see her in more stuff, because I do think she is a very unique looking and unique performing actress. I think that she's cute, and I know she's not conventionally cute, and I think she's also make some interesting choices. And I think that that's, you know, got to think about that also in the popularity of the movie. If you cast someone else in a role like this, I don't think it's quite as successful, but maybe I'm being, you know.
Yeah. I kind of defy any, you know, in 99, any of us who were like young film dorks or movie dorks, like everyone sort of immediately developed a crush on Franca Potente, mostly because of Run Lola Run.
Right. And you look back and it's like, I almost think, and not to sound too superficial, but like there's not really, aside from like the flaming red hair, and she definitely has a cute face, I think. It's not like she's the foxiest chick that ever lived. She's wearing like Doc Martens and dorky pants and a dumpy shirt. It's like, but you just respond to her energy. And I think that's also like what I mentioned before about like just this iconic character that he made and built this movie around. You've got this kind of symbol that we respond to and kind of like, well, you have to love this movie. It's just, you know, all the things that you love. Yeah.
You know, there was sort of a stigma. I think there's less of one now, but I think even in the 90s, again, I chalk most of this up to us being young at the time. There was always sort of a stigma about foreign films that people associate those with being like slow or pretentious. Everybody pictures a Bergman movie. It's black and white. There's barely any dialogue. It's in subtitles. It's like, ugh. And so this was a movie that grabbed a lot of people, mostly because it was the opposite of everything they sort of traditionally associated with foreign movies. That, a foreign film can kick my ass, you know?
And I'm not sure if, like, you know, this came out in, I think, 99 it came out in America. It was released in 98 in Germany, and that's the same year as Armageddon. And I'm just thinking, I'm trying to put things in context. Like, what else came out in 98, 99? I know, like, Saving Private Ryan, Shakespeare in Love came out in 98.
99 was, I mean...
99 awesome. Was a good year. Fight Club and all that stuff. So it definitely fits in that kind of mold also in some respects.
Yeah, that was part of it too, is that 99, like, we were going to the movies a lot and seeing all these things that were really good and felt really new. And it was like, man, movies are in a great place. And then... you know, a year later, the total opposite was true. But this was definitely part of this, like, exciting movement of, like, movies pushing forward because you had all these new voices. You had David O. Russell and Paul Thomas Anderson and Spike Jonze and, like, all these kind of new people coming onto the scene. And not that these were their first movies, but these were, you know, David Fincher makes Fight Club. Like, there was this idea of a new Hollywood. And and Run Lola Run felt like part of that.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it definitely doesn't age super well, especially because some of the newness of it obviously is gone.
Right.
So now we've got the era of before the Raid the Redemption. It has a billion cuts, and this movie has a billion cuts. But it's like, well, this seems almost quaint. You know, in retrospect.
I like, you know, so much of the style I feel like fits the movie and the rhythm that he's going for. It's every once in a while it calls attention to itself in such a way that it feels like film school where every character says the bag like way too many times. Back in the bag, the bag, the bag, the bag, or just like repeated cuts of certain things. It's like, this is probably not necessary. But again, I know in his head this – it all made sense. And he's a musician, you know, he co-wrote the score for this and he wrote some of just the most incredible music for Cloud Atlas. Nominated for an Oscar, but, he's a musician as well. And so I know that, you know, he was definitely cutting this movie to a rhythm and not just the, that's like on the soundtrack. And is that Franco Potente? Yeah. Like, singing, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, yeah. She wishes, I wish I was the hunter.
I wish I was a starship or something.
It's very weird, too, because it's in English. So, obviously, maybe he knows his market, too. Like, he knows this is going to break through. He was onto something special, and he kind of seized it and said, fuck it, let's do, an English song. You know, it'll be released in Europe and America. And it did definitely catch on, this, you know, and it's still...
This something interesting just like occurred to me, like what you just said, that I think the movie definitely feels European, but I also feel like it feels very American and it sort of straddles both things. And you had just pointed out this came out a year after Armageddon, and Armageddon is a movie with a cut, I think every 1.5 seconds or something like that. Like, people have timed it before. It's crazy just how aggressively that movie is edited. And you come out of it feeling just empty and beaten up. And then you see this movie, which is sort of, in theory, doing the same thing, but this is so effective. And it's like, oh, here's someone who knows how to do it in the best possible way.
And I think there's thing. It's interesting you brought that up, because there's definitely in Armageddon is over 2 hours. It's like 2.5 hours, right?
At least, yeah.
And it's like, how do you sustain that frantic? I don't think it's kinetic. I think it's frantic. I think it's just like... insane. It's ADD, that pace of cutting and stuff. And you definitely feel worn out, where this movie, like you said, is 80 minutes long. I think there's a cut. I read this. It was like every 2.7 seconds in this movie. But what's interesting is that most of those cuts in this movie come at the beginning of the movie. It sets a very high pace where it's going to be like, you know, when she's running, it's out of control. But near the end, it actually swung a great deal. And I think that you're able to like catch your breath and like, kind of, and the movie is a fantasy, you know, it's obviously, there's three different storylines and stuff, so you're able to kind of sink your teeth into it at the very end and hope that these two lovers find their way, and they do, and I mean, that's a spoiler, but it's not like the movie is really about that anyway, so, yeah.
And it's smart, too, the way that it sort of goes down different paths. It introduces, like, almost little subplots inside of the greater plot, so every time she busts in on her dad, who's clearly having an affair with this woman, we pick up new information, or the dynamic is a little bit different. And so it's smart in that it doesn't just literally repeat sort of the same thing with slightly different
outcomes. Oh, my God. Yeah, that would be definitely like a film school mistake. You know, just like,
right.
I do the same thing until she changes things. It's like, no, everything right. just is changed because it's a different timeline. Why would it have to be, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
This movie had a profound impact on you in particular, and you know, we all have these movies that we sort of take ownership of, either because we're the first ones to see them or that, you know, we respond to them maybe more than the people around us. And so there's definitely movies that like, well, that's a Mike movie or that's a JB movie. And there's movies that I definitely think of as Doug movies, and Run Lola Run is definitely a Doug movie, not just because you're a proud German man, but because you have a very special relationship with this movie.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Patrick. I was thinking about that. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast about how this came out, and I was a senior in – I don't know. It came out in the – I don't even know when it came out. I got to think the fall of 99, right, when I first saw it. And that December, I was gone pretty much the entire month of December in Berlin. I had a friend at DePaul who moved there with his girlfriend, and he said, come on by. Whenever you want, my place is open to you. There's so much more I could tell you about this story, but I won't. I'll stick to the Run, Lola, Run aspect of it.
It because, ends with man, you alone, stranded in Germany.
It definitely ends with me alone, without my passport, without money, wandering the streets of Berlin. And but long story short, I'm back in America for sure. I'm definitely not still stranded in Europe, Patrick. but I – so, yeah, I went there, and I didn't have an agenda. My first time in Europe, I went there by myself hoping that this guy would pick me up, and he did. And I was there for a long time with not a lot of money and a lot of time on my hands to walk around and learn the train system and just kind of explore the city by myself, and I did that. And I don't even know how it came up, but this friend of mine – I guess at that point, obviously, they knew – the Germans knew and people in Germany knew that Run, Lola, Run was kind of blowing up. In a matter of speaking, in America, like, it was a popular movie, and I think it was really popular in Germany, specifically Berlin, where it's all filmed. So my friend actually knew somehow through a friend or a friend of a friend. He's like, oh, yeah, Franka Potente lives in Berlin, and a buddy of mine knows her, and he knows where she lives. And I, like a crazy person, seized on this, and I was like, I just berated my friend, like, oh, so where does she live? What do you know about this? Because I'm so interested. I had just seen this movie a few months earlier, and I was in love with it in Chicago, and I'm in Berlin now. I'm living this dream and drinking beer with every meal. That's crazy. And I need to go, like, meet her, and I want to meet her and buy her a cup of coffee because that would be something that she would be into for sure. So my friend,
hey, I'm American. Right. Do you like my blue jeans? I don't know why you have an accent.
Because I do, actually. You remind me of my past. So I somehow got directions to – we didn't have an address, but knew like the neighborhood she lived in and the house description of where she lived. And actually, believe it or not, I have in my hands – a journal I carried with me.
Nice. Wow, you came prepared.
You hear that paper?
I have a journal too. Day 12. Doug is still gone. I'm so alone. It gets darker.
Well, in my journal I wrote, and it's funny because I remember up until recent – this is – I'm peeling back the curtain on myself. Let me jump ahead. Oh, so I wrote in my journal the directions to this place, and I'm going to read a couple of it. Eisenacherstrasse to Möchrenbrüche.
What are you saying?
Get off at Schleißisches Tor, bridge, follow train across canal. U-15 to Cottbusser Tour, get on U-8 Wittenau. By the way, this is like there are 18 transfers to get to this part of East Berlin from where I was staying in Grünewaldstrasse in Schöneberg. Anyway, so it said get off at Rosenthalerplatz, walk north, house on right, bright yellow, first door, question mark?
I hope she doesn't still live there because I feel like you just gave directions to her house on this podcast.
It was the bright yellow building on a building of like white. East Berlin is very much more industrial than West Berlin from the days of Russian occupation and stuff. So this was like a bright yellow house. And I fucking got on a train one morning with my journal and I'm like, I'm going to go to this girl's house. And I took many trains and transferred. And at this point, it was probably late in my trip, so I was very comfortable with my very rudimentary, German 1 and 2 in college. And I got off the train. It was like a work day. No one's around. I'm walking around. And sure enough, I see this fucking yellow house. And I walk up to it and I'm like, what do I do now? Like, there's no one around, you know?
Did you have like a plan in mind? Like, if I find this, what will I do?
I should see her, right? I would just randomly see her. That's my plan. No, no plan whatsoever. Are you crazy? I mean, are you as crazy as I was at 21? I, sure enough, the door was open to the lobby, not to the main building, but to the lobby. Right. And I see, and I, at this point, I'm just looking for verification or confirmation that this is, in fact, what my friend had been talking about. And on one of the mailboxes, her name is Franca Potente, but it said Franca, or no, it said F period Impotente. And I'm not sure if that's a joke or if it was just like maybe her real name. I have no idea. But I'm like, well, surely yellow house on this street that my friend directed me to with this this mailbox, this has to be her. So at this point, I'm realizing I look kind of creepy right now. So I left the building and I was like pacing around for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, just like walking up and down the street thinking that, hey, maybe I'll see. And what am I expecting? Her, a red-haired – like, of course she doesn't have red hair. It's a bar, you know? So I took out my journal and I'm like, okay – here's what I'll do. I'll leave her a note, which is not crazy at all. And she will be totally charmed by me. So I took out a note. Like, Franca Potente, my name is Doug. I'm from Chicago. I've seen your movie. And by the way, the German name of the movie is Lola Rent, and spelled R-E-N-N-T. In a moment of before Google and writing this note on the middle of a street in East Berlin, I think I misspelled the title of the movie in German because I wanted to write it in German because I thought that would be like, I'm legit. I'm not as crazy as you think I am. So I think I spelled it R-A-N-N-T, rant, which probably is a horrible anti-Semitic slur or something. Who knows? So I wrote, and I wasn't happy with my penmanship because you know me, Patrick. Am I a perfectionist to some extent? And not a way that makes me perfect at all, but a way that is crazy and not helpful and kind of sick. So I ripped out another piece of paper and I rewrote the note. And I think the conclusion of the note was like, I'm a fan. I'm in Berlin on a trip. I'd love to buy you coffee. Call me at my friend's number and here's the number. And I'm like, surely this will do the trick. And I walked back in the lobby. I stuck that in her mailbox, and I have not been arrested, so I think it's a success.
How often did she call during the rest of your trip?
It's funny you bring that up, and I got to say this story doesn't have the excellent ending that you probably were hoping for, podcast audience. That it, sure enough, maybe it's because I misspelled the title of the movie. No one had called. Wait a minute. I'm realizing I didn't have access to the phone.
Oh, man.
Like, not told me because he wants his own one-on-one with Franca Potente. But, yeah, no, it was a very weird thing that I did. And I am so not that guy. And Patrick, please speak for me to say, like, I'm not – like, I don't care about celebrities. We've been to shows and I see the person that just performed. And I'm like, I don't need to walk up and talk to them or get their autograph. But I was in love with Franca Potente because of Run, Lola, Run. And – I left a note and I was kind of crazy. And for the longest time, I had the other draft of the note in my journal. And I think I might have thrown it away before I gave – because now here's the kicker. This journal is now Shadia, my wife Shadia's birth journal. So the first page is still directions to front of house. But the rest of it is like, when contractions are 3 minutes apart, you need to do this. Stay home as long as possible. 3-1 rule. Any gush of blood, call this number. That's the journal now.
If the baby is a girl, will you name her Lola?
Oh, shit. That's a good name.
Thank you.
Nice. But I had the other note for the longest time, but I ripped it out of embarrassment before I gave the wife the journal so she can use it for whatever she wanted to use it for, because I was like, you don't need to see me. I mean, I told her the story. Like, I'm not embarrassed to be crazy when I was 21. I'm sure we all do crazy stuff, but like, you don't need to see evidence of this.
Right. Would you... If you could redo it, Run Lola Run style, would you not leave the note or would you do it all the same?
I can't imagine doing it any differently, which is to say I realize now more than ever that it's a crazy thing to do. The only thing I would do differently is probably spell the name of the movie right.
Did you ever think about like shooting Ronald Reagan for her?
Oh, no. Come on now. I'm not crazy. And this is, I mean, obviously that's the story about Run, Lola, Run. But I when I went to East Berlin that day, because a lot of the stuff that's shot in the movie takes place in East Berlin, far away from where I was staying in Schöneberg. And I had a video camera. I still have the video. I want to say it's SVHS, which is the small, like, half-size VHS tape that fits inside a bigger VHS tape to play.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
That sounds right.
Okay. So I borrowed an SVHS camcorder from my then-girlfriend, who I totally wouldn't have cheated on with Franco Potente at all. But the I forgot about this until I watched it probably 6 or 7 years ago. I have to watch it again like now because I'm jonesing to see it. But I don't have a working VCR. That I went to a couple of the sites for the movie, specifically the bridge that she runs under. It's a very iconic, like with arches and a very old world bridge. And I did this. I'm not embarrassed to admit this. The place is empty. There's no one around. I set the camera down. On like a, I don't know if it was on the ground or on like a garbage can. I fucking ran across on home video for Run, Low, Run. So say what you want about the themes being pedestrian and 101, because I've said these things too. It's a gimmicky movie. It's all style, no substance. That movie meant something to me. Okay.
Listen, we didn't say a ton about the movie Run, Low, Run, and we've been combating a lot of audio issues in the recording of this podcast. And yet I feel like it will go down as one of our very best shows just based on like the last 6 minutes.
Should I be embarrassed? Should I like rethink what I just said?
No, I'm not saying that to embarrass you. I just think I love the fact that like you just revealed that you put the camera down and ran across the bridge. I'm being genuine. I'm not making fun of you for it. Like,
question.
Yeah, as an adult, it's like, yeah, I'm a little embarrassed that I did that, but I think you recognize that, like, it's not anything to actually be embarrassed about, and it's funny that you have revealed it, so I appreciate it.
Question, what's more embarrassing, this or the Havrick story?
This, only because you were older, and it's not so much that I never thought the Havrick was embarrassing. I just thought it was so bizarre, like, that you invented an animal and named it after a character in Top Gun. I just thought, I didn't think you had anything to be embarrassed about. I just thought it was so odd. This, I think, you should probably not show your face again.
Well, I think Franco Potente is a fan, let's be honest. I'm hoping she listens to this and gives me a second chance. I know I've got a baby on the way and a wife I love very much, and I surely wouldn't cheat on my wife.
When you saw Blow and she was in the movie, were you like, oh, that's why she didn't call. She was busy
doing coke with Pee-wee Herman.
And also shooting the movie Blow.
Does she get naked in Blow? She might.
I don't remember. You're my go-to guy for that kind of thing.
Naked in a pool. But then she dies off pretty quickly. And oops, spoilers for Blow.
They totally give her the Zoe Bell.
The movie itself is a little it's a little film school, but it's still, I think it's still pretty great. And I even when I first watched it, I'm like, oh, this is film school. And then I get into it and I'm like, no, but this is still just enjoyable. And what more do I want from a movie? Am I gonna like overthink it? I don't know. I mean,
are we talking about Run, Little Run again?
We're talking about Blow.
Okay, yeah, I couldn't tell.
No, Run, Little Run. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
All over the place. I apologize. Audio issues aside.
Yeah, it's good. It's a movie that I might return to a couple times. Again, it's sort of this weird novelty. It's like, I put it in the category of like Blair Witch Project, which isn't to say that they're like the same quality wise, but just they're these weird, like one-offs that exist unto themselves and do this one special thing, well or not, depending on your feelings about either movie. But,
And maybe I'm alone. I think Run, Little Run is rewatchable. In fact, every once in a while, and I realize for all the reasons I just said, like I'm obviously a fan, but it's definitely a movie I get in the mood to watch. And that's even why I brought it up for the purpose of a podcast. I'm like, I want to watch it again. Can we parlay that into a show? And you said, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was good thinking. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
This is probably the last podcast you will record pre-baby. So I just want to say congratulations on the birth of he or she.
Either way, go on.
You're a great father, and I'm super happy for you guys. And that baby is adorable. And Franca Potente does not know what she's missing.
Take a bullet for my baby, okay?
I'm going to shoot your baby.
I'll take the bullet.
I'm sorry. I'm going to try and shoot your baby. I will end up shooting you.
Then what about the podcast?
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
You
thank you, Doug. Everybody congratulate Doug in the comments.
What? Congrats. Awesome story.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my gosh, that story is a revelation. If we were to have another contest, like, what was your favorite moment from the show in 2013? Hands down, Doug running on the bridge on video.
I didn't even tell you the best part. After I did that, kidnapped.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Patrick.